Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing all right. Shout out to Bob Blake, who we just moved into his new apartment in Greenwich Village. We were waiting outside by the moving truck, and this kid named Sean walked up to us, points at us, and says, "You guys, Jews, for Jesus, peace."
Right, which, you know, in hindsight, maybe he shouldn't have said, "You guys are Jews."
Look, this could have gone in any different number of directions.
It was almost like we were being rounded up.
But I'm glad that he appreciates our music video and song, Jews for Jesus Peace. Anyway, Jeff, if people want to find us, where can they find us?
They can find us on SoundCloud.com. They can find us on iTunes. We can go to their place and recreate it for them.
Is there any episode that you'd like to recreate?
Yeah, let's go over there and recreate the Gunplay Amigos episode.
All
Why
right.
not?
Hit us up. We'll come over and we'll do that. We should probably get into this
Casserole!
Next episode. We should get into this next episode with Teray, who you know him from Sirius and you know him from his rapping. He has a new album out called Entitled. And when do you want to start it, Jeff?
Not now, but like right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Fish Tacos, a.k.a. Real Rap. Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Floor Length Furs, a.k.a. Bearskin Rugs.
Hey, how you guys doing? My name is Teray Bartholomew Jeffrey Carr.
Woo!
That's what my mom named me, and I'm here with these guys.
It's a waste of time with this, the real.
Those are not my real names, by the way.
Oh, really?
Just so
you don't even have like a communion name or something?
No, I don't have a communion name. I got a community name, though.
What's
in
that?
The community, they call me Spice. They used to call me back in the day.
Spice like the...
Spice.
Like dill.
No, yeah, like dill.
I thought it was like Spice, like the synthetic weed or whatever that is like.
Oh wow,
for everybody.
K2.
Is that what these kids are doing these days?
It's really
That's
terrible.
What Eric and I do.
I know.
That's what you do before you got here.
That's how I keep all the weight off.
all of the cool guys in my neighborhood had Ice in their name. Like it was Ice, it was Slice, it was Nice, and so I became Spice. I named myself Spice.
You gave yourself the nickname?
Yes.
I'm not so mad at that. Like, as years go by, like, at first, when I was young, I was just like, no one can give themselves their nickname. You have to be given one.
I still agree with that. I lived with a guy in college.
I was a rapper always, though. So
right, yeah.
I wasn't going to use my government name. What kind of idiots use their government name to rap?
Yo,
you
real
do.
Real names, don't give me.
Yeah. By the way, I lived in college. I lived with this guy who named himself Teabag. And one day I was sitting in my room and like it overlooked the parking lot, and I just see him chanting his name as he walked through, like he was just going T-back. and then like, you know, it stops, and I guess he takes the elevator up, and then it continues as he goes down the hall, comes in the apartment, and for like 15 minutes he was just chanting T-back.
Maybe he just T-bagged something.
Maybe.
Like
a triumph victory round or something.
What a life.
I don't know. He also got chlamydia, which is a cool story. Anyway.
Shouts to Teabag.
Yeah. So today we made salmon for Teray.
Yeah, being that it is a food podcast.
Right.
We ran into Teray most recently up at Red Rooster in Harlem for the premiere. I think it was a premiere or it was a screening. Yeah, of The Breaks on VH1, which is based off Dan Charnas's phenomenal book, and everyone should go out there and get it. It's called The Big Payback, and it's loosely based off that. There were original characters, and Teray was in there, and also at the screening. And so Teray and I were talking,
right?
And Teray said he made this sort of like change in his diet where he was looking to lose some weight and had been eating only salmon. Is that correct?
That is very correct.
So,
and that was less than a month ago. And so we made you salmon in Papillote, one of our favorite things to make around here.
It looks amazing.
Yeah, we made it for Bodega Bams.
Zucchini and
shallot.
Yep. And lemon and salt and pepper.
We made it for Bodega Bams. He ate everything, including the lemon.
So Teray walks in
and goes, "So I don't eat salmon anymore."
So what's the diet now, and what's the basis?
I've just decided as of January 1st that I was going to totally take all like meat, fish, poultry, everything out of my diet and go vegetarian for a month and see how I feel. You know, it's kind of like a detox cleanse. Obviously, I'm looking to drop a little more weight. So it was all those things wrapped in one. Had I known that you guys were going to make me amazing salmon,
couldn't delay it for like,
I would have held off.
It almost feels like we should have done the podcast in 2015. Like, it's our fault.
That is definitely our fault, isn't it?
Yeah. About a week ago. Week ago.
All right. Can we take it back to
the old school?
What we're going to do right here is go back.
You're from Coney Island.
Facts.
And Coney Island
is the last stop on the train.
More facts.
Where specifically are you from in Coney Island?
I'm from 23rd Street between Surf and Mermaid, two-third, as we affectionately have labeled it in the neighborhood.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have, well, you guys are white, so you might count these differently. Mm-hmm. I don't have any full brothers and sisters. Okay. Meaning my mom and dad only had me. They got it right the first time. Yep. It was like, we good. From my mom, I have a younger brother and a younger sister. From my dad, I have a younger brother and a younger sister.
Did you grow up with them?
I grew up with my mom's kids in my house. My dad was gone. You know, he went off. He did his Diddy Bop thing. Mm-hmm. And I grew up with my mom, obviously. And she had two more kids, and that's who I grew up with. So that we are closer, yeah. Honestly, because we grew up together. So we are closer. But, you know, I look at them all equally as my brothers and sisters.
What is it like growing up on Coney Island? Because obviously people understand, like, there's hot dogs.
There's the Wonder Wheel, right? There's, right. Like,
the Warriors. Cyclones. Yeah. The Warriors wanted to end up there.
And
yeah.
There's the boardwalk.
And there's the boardwalk. And that's pretty much what most people get from Coney Island. But mm-hmm. Coney Island is in Brooklyn. And as you go
barely.
Brooklyn, it's the very last tip of Brooklyn, but it's still in the borough. Now, you know, growing up in Coney Island, like, obviously, as a kid, you don't know that everywhere else don't have these things, right? You know, you don't realize that you live in, like, this place where it's an attraction people come into. So, you know, it was just like, oh, yeah, you know, the Bronx got, like, a zoo, and you're just thinking everywhere is, like, you know, kind of similar. And then you grow up, and then you realize, like, wow, this was, like, prime real estate. Like, it's a lot of amazing things here. But we grew up a few blocks away from all the fun stuff. We were in the hood, in the projects. And it's just like any other project in the city or, you know, anywhere around the world. It was crime. It was guns. It was heavy crack. You know, I grew up in the crack era, so it was heavy crack. And
what were your projects called?
Carry Gardens. Mm-hmm. Carry Gardens, or some people call it the Carry Garbage, you know, just because.
I would never.
You would never carry garbage?
Well, that too. But I would never call it that.
Yeah, Carry Gardens, two-thirds.
I would call it Corny Island, though.
Shit. Boy, I'm going to pluck you, little bitch.
No beans, Jeff.
No beans for you. I brought my own beans. You guys left that out.
No, no, you do bring your own beans.
Got my own beans.
Travel with
beans. I like the idea of you just carrying your own beans around.
I mean, who else is going to carry my beans, bro?
You're a rapper. You don't got a bean guy?
No. You know what? I had a weed carrier, mm-hmm. and I don't smoke weed, mm-hmm. so he got fired. Mm-hmm. I probably should have kept him to carry my beans.
Rick Ross has someone who massages his head, his scalp.
That's a real job.
Yeah.
I saw when he was on The Real, no pun intended.
Yeah. Oh, The Other Real.
He had, wait, was it Real or was it Wendy? No, I think it was The Other Real. And he had like a clone.
Oh, yeah.
Not a clone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they yeah. have, like,
another guy.
Yeah.
It was
a doppelganger.
Yes, it was a doppelganger. There,
like,
you go.
Like Saddam Hussein had, like, multiple, like,
right, in case anyone wants to, like, shoot him. Yeah.
So he goes, I'm going to pay you $1,000 a day. To get clapped at.
Well, mm-hmm.
possibly. You know
it's, what I mean? It's like the Secret Service, you know?
I suppose.
He's got his own Secret Service.
Yeah, but like, Obama doesn't have people who look like him around.
Right, he's got a bunch of guys in suits.
I mean, they also have weapons and earpieces, but...
Helicopters.
Definitely got yeah. earpieces. Mm-hmm. Earpiece galore.
So, earpieces galore is Lyra Galore's...
Her nickname?
Yeah, it all ties back in.
So, okay, so you grow up on Coney Island. Do you feel like it's totally separate from the rest of Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Are you shut off from the rest of Brooklyn? Are you moving around?
Well, it's an island, so you got to take a boat to get there. No. I guess it's Coney Peninsula, though, right?
Right, because it's really surrounded by...
This changes
history.
Everything.
Yeah. Right, it's everything. It's everything they've taught you has been wrong in these history books.
Mm-hmm.
Coney Island was definitely, you know, like we said, it's the very southern part of the borough of Brooklyn. And I feel like a lot of times people didn't necessarily count it as a part of Brooklyn. You know, people are like, yeah, that's not Brooklyn. That's, you know, they thought it was some far off shit like Long Island or Staten Island. Or, you know, it had island on it, so they just assumed. I'm like, but no, it's Brooklyn.
But what do you think it's part of Brooklyn? Like,
it's absolutely Brooklyn. I mean, it's part of Brooklyn. We got 112 in our zip code. It's
no,
Brooklyn.
But beyond like technicalities, like, do you guys consider it?
Beyond
like,
the fact that if you look at a map it's,
right,
and it's there.
Geographically, it's right there.
Yeah,
but
do you feel like it's
that,
not?
Nah, you know what? I think we spent so much time trying to prove ourselves, trying to prove that Coney Island was a part of Brooklyn. Even as recently as maybe like 3 months ago, there was a, you know, everybody was doing their Straight Outta.
Yeah,
so,
right.
So K-Slay had a Straight Outta Brooklyn. And like they called the meeting. Like people called me that I haven't spoken to in years. And they were like, yo, we got to sit down. We got to talk about this.
What?
So I show up because I'm a Coney Island guy. So I show up to the meeting. And they like, yo, they still disrespecting us. It was nobody from Coney Island on their Straight Outta Brooklyn song. And we got to make our own song. And
wow.
I was like, yo, it's still that real. Like people still care that much.
Yo,
we definitely always felt like we had to prove ourselves. Like we, you know, they kind of treat us like we were the stepkids of Brooklyn. Yeah. Right. Because it was like Bed-Stuy. You know what I'm saying? It was like East New York. And it was like, oh, Coney Island, you guys got a beach and a Wonder Wheel and cotton candy. Like shit is sweet. But it ain't sweet, you little bitch.
But really, when it comes to like your own, when you're like, oh, Stefan, like that's our guy, right?
Right, when he
made it to the NBA, you're like, where's he from? Not from Brooklyn.
Coney Island.
Coney Island.
Absolutely. You know, we've had seven guys make it to the NBA.
Can you name all seven?
Can I name all seven? Stephon Marbury, Sebastian Telfair.
Those are the easy ones.
Quincy Doobie.
Kristaps Porzingis.
Lance Stephenson. Norm Richardson. Jamel Thomas. That's six. Maybe it was just six.
If you get pulled over in Brooklyn, this should be what the cops like ask you. Like, yeah, exactly. Sober.
Like, you know what? Name everybody from Coney Island that made it to the league. If I'm missing anybody, I'm going to get beat up. But I think that's it.
Are you playing ball at all?
You know what? I knew from a very early age that it were guys in my neighborhood that were ridiculously good at basketball.
Mm-hmm.
I was not one of those people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I focused my talents on the arts. Rapping and drawing and dancing.
You should have been an NBA scout.
I should have been a scout. I was like, yo, just come to my block. Yeah. They right here. They right here.
But like, where is here? You know, it's just so far.
Did you watch the J. Cole documentary?
I just actually caught it night before last.
I thought it was really excellent.
Yeah, it was really good.
It was put together really well.
In it, he mentions, he's like, oh, I knew guys that could have been in the league. And he's not the first person to say this. I feel like everyone is like, yo, I know guys that could have been in the league. But like,
by the way, I don't. Nobody from Westchester was I like, oh, well,
T-Bag couldn't have made it to the league.
Yeah.
He wasn't from Westchester.
You lie.
But you know what, though? When Sammy Maldonado was playing football for us and took us to the championship game twice.
Yeah.
Won and brought that championship back to Harrison.
The chip.
And then he went to Ohio State. Everyone was like, yo, he really could have made it.
And then
he did not make it. those were his choices. But you really felt like there were other guys beyond the six that you named who really could have made it.
Absolutely.
If like other things didn't come into their lives.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's about the talent. And I feel like so many guys from the neighborhood had the talent. But then it's everything else after that.
Right.
You know, it's the upbringing. It's the this. It's the that. It's the grades. It's the mindset. It's the, you know, all these different little variables that play a part in, you know, everybody's life decisions. You know what I'm saying? Not just a basketball player, but the little things that you do or little things in your life that happen that change the dynamic of everything. And that's the difference between a guy making it to the NBA and not. Did you guys see the Lenny Cook story?
No.
Mm-mm. We should check it out. You should mm-hmm. screen it since you guys are part of the guild and shit. The Lenny Cook story is an excellent example of that. It was a guy from New York City who was right there with Melo, right there with Stat, right there with LeBron, right there with, you know what I'm saying, all these guys. And after you watch it, you'll understand. But just, you know, a series of like bad decisions and the wrong people in your ear and shit around you, it changes your life. And you go from being, you know, one of the best ball players in the city to guys not knowing your name.
So what was the turning point? What was that moment for you?
For me, to not play ball?
No, to... It was shooting.
When I went on the court and I was like, these motherfuckers is good.
But what was there a moment where you're just like, my life could have gone like a totally different direction if it wasn't for this? Your sliding doors moment, if you will.
I think I'm just wired a little different. You know, I grew up, I come from very humble beginnings. You know, my pops wasn't around. You know, my little brother's dad raised me. My mom had her struggles early in my life. You know what I'm saying? So it was a lot of stuff that I could have used as an excuse or used as a crutch. But I feel like all those things motivated me to want to do better, to want to get out of the hood, to want to prove something to myself and everybody else. And, you know, I just felt like I was better than my situation or circumstances. And so it was just like figure out how to get out of this shit and, you know, and make it better.
Were there other people around you who had those same dreams?
The only reason I really rap was because of two guys from my building who I saw do it. You know, I saw them in talent shows. I saw them get fly haircuts. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, they rap. Like, they about to be on. Like, it's about to be crazy.
Who are they?
And their names were Deadly and Dangerous. Shout out to Guy. Shout out to Flav.
Deadly
and Dangerous. And not Deli. That was a different guy.
I grew up in an Italian neighborhood, so.
Yeah, I was a fat Italian guy. Yeah. Forget about it. Yeah, but you know, they along with a few other, you know, like neighborhood legends like Mighty Real and, you know, everybody who was part of Supreme Forces,
mm-hmm.
my man Space, my man Kill, Those guys are telepathic. Those guys are the ones who...
By the way, no one with ice in their name.
No ice. These, well, the ice guys were all the hustlers. All the cool hustler guys was ice. They all had BMWs and, yeah. You know what I mean? The souped up Maximas and shit. But yeah, all these guys made me feel like I could do music. And like it made it really, really tangible. Like it was right there. You know, I saw them do certain things and I was like, wow, you know, I could do that. Like, I think for me... Being the artist of rapping, it was like I needed the least amount of tools. It was like, even to play basketball, you got to have a ball. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I was like, yo, all I need is a pen and a piece of paper to do this. And if I don't have that, I just need to build my memory. So either way, I already had everything I needed. And that's kind of what led me to being a recording artist.
And you write your rhymes.
I do write them down.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, yes, somebody writes your rhymes for you is what I was trying to get at.
No one writes my rhymes for me. I write my own rhymes down. And I used a book, until I started writing on my BlackBerry right before I made the jump from BlackBerry. But for a really, really long time, I still wrote my stuff down, like, in a book. I would still buy rap books.
You're left-handed?
No, I'm not left-handed, but I have a bottle of water in my right, and so that's why I did it with my left.
Maybe you were just shooting wrong with the wrong hand.
I'm ambidextrous with these bitches, though.
Wow.
When
you were on the court, you were just shooting with the wrong hand. This derailed your
Do you want me to write that for you and then send it to you so you don't forget it?
You know what?
Ambidextrous with these bitches?
Actually, what you could do is send me a copy of this particular podcast. Uh-huh.
You see these guys in your building, and they're doing it at what age? Like, are they high school age? Are they like middle school?
They were all a little older than me, but not by much.
And where are you? Are you middle school, high school?
I started rapping. I was in elementary school when I started rapping.
Oh, okay.
I can remember being in public school and being a rapper, like banging on the table and trying to come up with stuff. You know, I didn't really get fully engulfed in it until middle school. And that's when it was like really, really on.
Were you part of any like group?
I was in a group. So Deadly and Dangerous, not Deadly, but Deadly. Let yes. me enunciate, pronounce. Deadly and Dangerous. One of the guys in the group, Guy, he had a nephew named Robert who was my, because they were a group. So I had to be a group. I had to be in a group.
Sure.
So me and Robert ended up in the group and we were positive.
Wait, did you audition?
We didn't audition. We were just the other two kids in the room. And we were like, well, let's, we got to do it too. And so we formed a group, Positive and Negative.
Wow. It's like everybody has to have like their counterpart. That was
our thing. I mean, we were like a direct copy of these guys. So, you know, he's deadly, he's dangerous. He's positive, he's negative.
I mean, you guys took it to like a really like basic level.
Yo, it was
basic
like,
and complicated.
Dog, it was so like marketing plans and strategies, dog. So listen, man. CEO's mind, that marketing plan was me.
Yeah.
We had album cover mapped out.
Were you positive or negative?
Of course I was positive.
Did you spell it with an E at the end or no?
Nah. We shortened it, so I was Pos T.
Oh, okay.
Pos T.
Wow.
When you read it, it just looked like post.
Was this?
So yeah, he was negative and I was Pos T because it was positive K, so I couldn't come out and be positive T. So we just shortened it to Pos T.
Post.
No Malone.
Yeah.
This was pre-post Malone.
Mm-hmm. I worked at AOL and HBO. They had a comedy website, and it was called thisjustin.com. But if you read it, it was thisjustin.com. That was just one of the reasons why it failed. Yeah. But yeah.
So, okay. So, positive, negative. Did you tell your mom at that point? You're like, yo, just so you know. We're about to take off.
Out here. She knew. You know, I think she always knew that I had a passion to make music. I grew up around a lot of music. She would listen to a lot of music.
Like
but
what?
Also, like a lot of soul shit and disco and, you know, like everything that was popping, like, I guess, in the early 80s when I was a kid or whatever. So,
Taylor Dane.
Definitely Taylor Dane. I still listen to Taylor Dane. You got a problem with that, my G?
No, I said that as the first example. Obviously, everybody's listening to Taylor Dane. Tiffany, you know, the whole group.
My grandfather was a really well-known party promoter and he owned a couple clubs and he owned a couple of hotels and he was a big shot in Harlem, Mr. Soul. So, you know, he had a bunch of clubs and he had, like I said, hotels and people would live over top of the clubs and all types of cool shit. So anyway, there were always turntables in my house, always records in my house. And so that's kind of how I started. Like, I just saw it. It was all right there. And I remember seeing the Jimmy Spicer 12-inch for Dollar Bill, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
And on the flip, had the instrumental. And so I would listen to the instrumental over and over and over until I could recite the whole entire song. And then once I got to that point, and I showcased that to my mom, when she would have company over, you know, she called me out the room and shit. They'd take off the Millie Jackson. And they'd be like, it's all right, do that thing that you do. And, you know, I would perform.
You're like, no problem.
Yeah. Absolutely.
2, 3, 4.
And go. Yo, my little footy pajamas that was probably cut out. I was probably mad tall for them shits. But, you know, that was the start. That was the beginning of it all. So
did you kill?
I definitely slayed.
Yeah.
Wait, could you also dance?
I wasn't much of a dancer, you know. I guess I could pop lock and shit. Now I was really kind of small as a kid because I was a kid and so I was small. But yeah, because you know, like I wasn't abnormally big. Well, maybe that's not true. My mother said I was actually big as a baby. I forget how much I weighed.
Have you ever seen pictures of you?
No, you know the reason. What's up, Young Breezy over there in the corner? One of the reasons I chose this cover for my album art is because after my parents separated and we moved around and shit, I didn't have a lot of photos in my childhood, and I didn't take a lot of photos in like my teenage years. And so I was just like, here. It was like there was no recollection, no history of me prior to just being right here in the room. And so I went to visit my grandmom, and I asked if she had any pictures of me. Oh, I got a whole bunch of pictures. And she sent me to the photo albums, and I was like, can I have some? And she's like, yeah, take what you want. And so I took maybe like 15 to 20 pictures, and that was one of the pictures that I took.
Which is on the cover of your new album, entitled
Cop That Shit,
which is in stores right now.
Little bitch.
But you know what's funny? And not funny, I don't know. But your Throwback Thursdays must start at a certain point in your life then, being that you had no pictures really.
You know what? A lot of my Throwback Thursdays are from some people who have shit, like people that I was in high school with that might have a group photo of us or...
Like, you know, negative or...
Right, like my man Nag. Or like my cousins would have a candid moment of us as kids, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I'd be like, oh shit, look, I was there, and I would just jack it, and that would be that.
Were there talent shows in high school that you would perform in? Were you going out to like spots? Where would you perform?
I only performed
on the Wonder Wheel.
That was a big deal though. Yeah. If you could get your music played, not at the Wonder Wheel, but if you could get your music played at the bumper cars or at the Himalaya, which was the rod that goes backwards, and it doesn't really do much, honestly.
You're not really like selling really Coney Island circle. Too well. But
you've never been on the Himalaya?
No.
What's wrong with your life?
First of all, we're from Rye Playland, pretty much. Yeah. So we're like, I'm not Dragon about to go coasters. On. Yeah.
I'm taking you to Coney Island this summer.
Do they still have like freaks there? Like the
absolutely. I know it. She's still living in my old building. You talking about Dana? Oh, you're not talking about little freak Dana. Oh, yeah, they got like midgets and shit. But I thought you were talking about real freaks. I take you to see some freaks.
When
Eric thinks that Coney Island is stuck in the
1930s. Yeah, that's right.
He's like,
dogs are 5 cents, right?
Bearded ladies and yeah.
I bet those are still there. Probably definitely. See a few bearded ladies on the
boardwalk. Yeah. By the way, Himalaya sounds like a dope club.
How do you get your music? You like slide it off to the guy running the...
I mean, yeah, you had to know somebody. It was like, I guess it was payola.
Did you?
Yeah. It was like Coney Island payola.
Did you ever work on the boardwalk like on any of the rides or anything?
No. I was definitely too good for that. I worked at McDonald's. You know
really?
What I mean? With some type of dignity to myself.
Hold up. That was your first job or not?
My first real job was McDonald's.
Did you run register?
I did not.
Does it make it sound like I'm an insider? I'm like, did you run register?
They kept the register jobs for the girls. I guess they were more trustworthy and probably could count better. Probably knew math a little
bit. So were you working the fries?
I definitely worked in the kitchen. I wasn't on fries. That was for bitches.
No, hold on.
I was
First of all, have you listened to Kanye?
Yes. Yeah. This week he mopping fools. Next week is the fries.
Yeah.
No, I was on burgers. So the cool shit about me working at McDonald's was that... It was in the neighborhood, and so they hired all the neighborhood kids. So it was just me hanging out with my friends.
That is dope.
And somebody giving us money for it, and we could eat all the bullshit food we wanted.
That was bullshit food, though.
And that was definitely, that was absolutely, and that was the cool shit. Like, for me, any situation I'm in, maybe like 97% wise, I can make a good, you know, I can spin it and make it good.
Well, you're positive.
I'm positive. Positive.
Positive.
You know what I mean? So
negative, on the other hand.
Fuck this job. Fuck these fries and these burgers.
By the way, growing up, I don't know how your mop game was in McDonald's. My mop game was crazy.
Well, you didn't work at McDonald's.
No, I worked at the Purchase Community House.
At the community house, which was in like an after school, like, you know.
Rec center sort of thing.
They taught you how to mop, and they called bad mopping
McDonald's mopping. And that's when you go side to side.
Sloppy. Also, yeah. They hated it. Like, you can't do it while people are eating. Like, that would dissuade people from being there.
Right,
but you're supposed to push forward. That's how you mop correctly.
Interesting. I haven't mopped in a number of years.
Yo, so let's have a mop off.
I don't recall.
Let's have a mop off right now.
So in high school, though, where are you? You're getting your music played like here and there. But what's the big move towards like making this a career at that point?
Coming into as little as this is, it was such a big deal, was to leave Coney Island. I had to get out of Coney Island. I had to start coming to the city. Started doing talent shows. I mean, you know, we would do like Brooklyn public cable TV shows. We'd have little talent performance things. And we did that. And then we took that from, you know, doing it in Flatbush to doing it in Crown Heights. And then we took it from that to actually entering Manhattan. And
now, you're still positive negative at this point?
No. At this point, like, that group was very short-lived. I was in another group prior to that mm-hmm. called The Coalescence.
I'm sorry, what?
The Coalescence. It means to come together.
No, I know what it means. I'm just saying it's a terrible...
You got negative out of there. Coalescence.
Right. It's like, let's get rid of this negative stuff. Let's just come together.
That's right.
That's like the most like early 90s.
Well, for
group
sure,
name.
We would call The Co.
Oh, whoa.
Cool.
Yeah, The Co is cool.
And cool.
I'll take that.
Were you still Paz T?
No. I was Tory at this point. So, in my rap names, after Positive T, there was Czar. CZAR, yeah. Which is a play on my last name, Carr.
Yeah.
CARR.
Did anybody think it was Caesar?
A lot of people thought it was Caesar. Mm. A lot of people thought it was.
Were you rocking
Czar? Just a lot of. I realized how stupid people were. So it's like, this is probably not going to work well in the marketplace. So I changed it. So there
to
was
TSAR.
Positive, it was Positive T. There was Czar. And Spice. And Spice was my rap name as well. So, yeah.
There was another rapper named Spice, though.
Spice One?
Spice One. Yeah.
Yeah, that was Spice One. He looked like a murderer. So I didn't want to offend
him. They would not let him run the registers at McDonald's.
They would run the register if he walked in McDonald's. Yeah. Like, take it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I became Torre pretty early on just because I was like, you know what? Real name, no gimmicks.
Mm-hmm. So you're out there and you're performing here and there.
It was just like, get out there, figure out, you know, how to get your name out there, how to get your music out there, how to push your, before we called it a brand, how to push your brand to as many people as possible. And so, yeah, you know, like just doing talent shows and doing.
Were you your own manager?
Still.
Was there any point where you're just like, I wonder if there's someone else out there who could help me like be my.
Numerous times. It never worked. I think that the thing with me, and it's not that I'm so demanding, it's just that I want you to be as fully invested as I am. And it's difficult to find somebody who believes or who cares or he has the time, you know, especially when you're doing it at the early stages when there's not a lot of money coming in. It's like, you can't expect somebody to do this shit 24/7. They got bills. You know, I could do it 24/7 because at the end of the day, it's me, it's what I love, it's my livelihood. But for other people, you know, they just couldn't be that involved and invested. And so it never really worked out on the management side.
Who was, I know Eric wanted to ask you this, but I'm going to ask you because it's my turn to talk. And I'm talking right now, who was the first rapper that you met? Like, first famous rapper?
Fuji Rap in Queens.
What were you doing out there?
I was rapping
at Club Himalaya.
Yeah, no. Somebody knew Fuji Rap, or somebody was in the studio with Fuji Rap, or whatever. I ended up in the studio with Fuji Rap, and I rhymed for him because he was Fuji Rap, and he told me, he was like, "Yo, son, you nice, son. You like a mic murderer," and it meant so much to me. I'm pausing because this is the stupidest shit I probably ever did. I tattooed official Mike Murderer on my arm.
Wow.
Where it still remains to this day.
Right. Well, yeah, that's how tattoos work.
Yeah.
Nah, unless you Soulja Boy, then you just get it off. You know, he don't got the Gucci shit on his face.
Yeah,
no
yeah.
More. That was probably.
And Pharrell took all of his stuff off,
but good decision.
Our friend Young Sav, who works with Maybach Music.
Young Savage.
He he Instagram recently getting, or was
he
it
Snapchatted it.
Snapchatted.
He was getting a tattoo.
No, getting it removed.
Oh, he was getting it removed.
And he was, you hear like the zzzz, and you just like, ah! It just
hurt.
Looked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I imagine, I mean, that's got to be much worse than actually getting it tattooed in the first place.
But
right?
it goes so much. Quickly, though. Like the laser shit coming off, I was just like, whoa.
I saw Erica Mena getting some of hers removed, too.
Were hers?
I just kept watching her titties shake when she was doing it, so I don't even know where the tattoos were.
Yeah.
Because it was tits.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened.
Wait, where were they?
That's how the story
What was happening? I didn't understand the story at all.
Erica Mena breast. That's what you take from it.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute, hold on. She's a woman?
You know what was, I guess the pivotal moment was the first time I ever went to like a real recording studio, again in Manhattan. Helter Skelter were in there recording. Rest in peace to the big homie Sean Price. My man Mighty from Coney Island, Mighty Rail, who grew up with Buckshot, close friends with Buck. He kind of took me under his wing early on in the neighborhood as a kid. You know, he saw something in me. He liked me. And he was like, yo, I'm going to bring you around people. I'm going to take you to this and this and that. And I thought he was just blowing smoke like a lot of people do. And one day, he knocks on the door. He was like, yo, I'm going to take you to the studio tomorrow. So be ready at such and such time. I was like, all right. And such time rolls around. And he's at the door. And we roll out. And we go to the studio. And I was a big, huge, ginormous Boot Camp Click fan. We go to the studio, and Ruck and Rock were in the studio, and they were recording a song called Soldiers Gone Psycho, and I was at that session, and that was just, like, the livest, illest shit. I was like, yo, this is it. This is go mode. Like, this is what I want to do. I want to grow dreads. I want to wear boots. Fuck these sneakers I got on. Matter of fact, I'm going home barefoot. Just fuck sneakers. Who wears those?
Right.
You know, but that was a real big, that was, like, a real, real big deal for me. You know, that I told him just recently, I saw him at BB King's when we were celebrating with Duck Down. And I was like, yo, Doug, like, y'all raised me in this shit. Like, y'all was the catalyst for me doing what I do now. And for as proud as everybody is of me, I'm like, yo, without those moments early on, I wouldn't have been able to be here right now.
It's pretty great to say that to someone to their face, you know, have them appreciate it, you know? Because I think people sometimes try to be too cool with that and be like, nah, I'll save it. And it really means something.
And then you miss it.
I'm curious as to what you did in the studio that day. Like, did you sit around just like watching and like not say anything for the longest?
I was a fly on the wall. Funny enough, at this thing at BB King's just recently, as I'm telling this story to Mighty, he's like, yo, but let me tell you why I brought you there. They heard you on the radio. Because they used to do this thing on Ed Lisa and Dre, like call a roll call
or whatever.
So you could call up.
Wait, do you remember how the roll call went? Sorry to interrupt
your
story.
What's up, y'all? What you got to say? Who's on the phone with Ed Lisa and Dre?
Yeah.
Duh.
Yeah.
So, you know, I did the roll call, and then there was another thing that they would let you call in and freestyle on or whatever, whatever. So anyway, you know me. I'm Tour Ray from Coney Island, blah, 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 and I do my thing. And
shouts to you for getting up early, by the way.
They know I've always been an early riser. Okay. Like, even to this day, I'm up 6 o'clock.
And especially when they were like offering trips to Jamaica.
Were they? I couldn't go anywhere.
Oh my God.
I couldn't do shit.
You were going to the Bronx. You were going to Queens or whatever. Yeah.
That's it. They heard me on the radio and they heard me shout out Coney Island. And so they was like, yo, it's a little dude in your hood from Coney Island. He shout out Coney Island radio that get busy. So I didn't know that at that point. And that's why he brought me, because I was the dude. You know what I'm saying? So he's like, after we left and shit, I told him, like, yeah, that's the little shorty that y'all was talking about on the radio. That was him or whatever, whatever. So just like a little dope moment.
Well, did you get anything done? Was it like
politics? No. Like, it was literally just me.
Did
being
you dap
a
him
fly.
Up? Or
yeah, yeah. Okay. You know, they introduced me, whatever, whatever. But I was just like a fly on the wall. I was, yo, literally happy to be there. Like, I was ecstatic. Like,
when we first started doing sketches back in like 2007. We got somebody from OK Player like reached out to us and we're like, hey, do you want to come through to a listening party for the Roots new album? I forget which album it was, but they invited us down to like Karma or one of those clubs like down there.
On First and like First.
Something. And Questlove was spinning and like Black Thought was like working the room and everything. And it was packed with, you know, big Roots fans and the whole thing. And it's probably like 9 or 10 at night or something.
Right.
And the crowd thins out over time. And Questlove, who loves DJing, did not stop DJing until 4 a.m.
And by the way, so we were there and we wanted to get Quest in a video somehow. Mm-hmm. Or like, you know, even talk to like Black Thought and get him in a video. Like something to get them.
Just move things along.
Yeah. Right. And Black Thought wouldn't talk to us.
This was so way before like this smiling persona on, you know,
yeah,
on Fallon.
Before Fallon back, yeah. Black Thought.
And then Questlove, at least he was stationary, so like we could like keep an eye on him. And he DJ'd for like 6 hours.
But the two of us stood there, like arms crossed, like watching him. And it was cool. And we really appreciated it, but it was going on forever. And finally,
he stopped and he goes,
thanks for everyone for coming.
And we're the only two people there, by the way. And he must have thought that we were going to like kill him or something. Like,
well, he said that because we go up to him at the end and we're just like, hey, I'm Eric. I'm Jeff. We're, at that time, we were The Real. And we're like, we do this and we traded information or whatever. And he was like, well, I'm glad this happened because I thought you were here to kill me. Like, you were the only two people here.
you know, left, and you just stood there staring at me the whole time.
Oh, that well, mirror.
I mean, like, I don't know. I think it's a little shitty to, like, interrupt somebody while they're DJing.
Oh, for sure.
Definitely shouldn't do that.
That's the worst.
Actually, I think what would be worse is interrupting someone while they're rapping.
Probably. Well, it depends on who's rapping. Some people need to be interrupted. How about you stop right there where you are, mid-verse. Let me take it from here.
Right.
Yo, let me politic a little bit. Right. My name is Jeff.
Right. Let me ask you.
I have a website.
Things.
It's on Blogspot.
At any point, or like, you know, cousins being like, what are you doing?
It was never real to my family until maybe like
today.
Right. Like last week. No. Well, my family consisted of my mom for the most part. And so for her, she was very much traditional in what she wanted. You know, it's like, go to school, get a good ass job. Work a mundane ass job, you know, live a mundane ass life and die. You know, that's what your parents want for you. They want the best for you.
Your parents want you to die?
At some point, they want for you to be dead. You know, my thing was like, I want more out of life though. You know, that was never my like sit down at a desk 9 to 5 cubicle. Like that wasn't my bag. So it was always about me figuring out what I was gonna do. And everybody else had to catch on. You know what I'm saying? But for me, it was like, yo, I'm going to be on. I'm going to figure out how to make it. I'm going to be a rapper, and I'm going to go on the TV, and I'm going to do this and this and that, and I'm going to be a big star. And that's it. You can't tell me anything different. And so that was always my focus and my drive and my passion. So I think that one of the moments that, like, really clicked for me, no pun intended, was working with DJ Premier. Mm. You know, he came out to a show that I had with my group, The Coalescence. And, you know, at this point, now we, like, this is actually the 10-year anniversary of The Coalescence. We put our first song out in January of 2006. So that was the first thing I ever had in the marketplace that you know, that was, like, really for sale and out there.
Pressed up?
Pressed up on vinyl. Whoa. AV8 Records put the vinyl out. Shout out to my man Filthy Rich who helped that happen. I took said vinyl to Fat Beats and was like, help. And shout out to DJ Eclipse, who's been a big part of a lot of my story. Took the records in on consignment and was like, yeah, you know, if they sell, I'll give you a call. And that was it. But what he did bigger than that was they would play it. He would play it on the halftime show. And shout out to Sucio Smash and Tim C, who was doing Squeeze Radio at the time, and they would play it. And Pumpkinhead, rest in peace, mm-hmm. heard Promises, which was our single, on Squeeze Radio, and asked us to do a show at, rest in peace, Southpaw in Brooklyn. Yep. We rocked there, and you know, it was like little things like that. Everything was like little baby steps. But taking it back to me and Preem, so Preem was playing the record. He was familiar. He knew my DJ in the group. He knew we had some other mutual friends that he knew. And so they invited him out to a show that we were doing at Temple or TNY, whatever it was called at the time. And it was like a talent show with like a Faces in the Crowd or something like that. And he saw me rock with The Coalescence, and he was like, I like him. I want to work with him. And that was it. You know, that was because that's the moment that changed. That was like the Monday night to Tuesday morning, whole shit different. It was that moment after we did the records with Preem. But when he saw The Coalescence perform, you know, he heard me rhyme. He heard me on record because he's a DJ, so he hears that shit. But he hears a million people rhyme. Like if you walk one city block with DJ Premier, he's going to take 9 pitches, listen to 2 verses, get 4 mixtapes. That's just it. So it was something about me as a performer that made him gravitate to me more so than just me as an MC.
And so how did you keep in touch with DJ Premier?
It was all through a third party. Like I said, we had some mutual friends. And so, you know, my friend was like, yo, Preem loved it. He's like, yo, he want to work with you. I was like, okay. But again, you know, you hear that shit and it just sounds so crazy and far-fetched. They're going to throw out Walt Disney. What? What are you talking about? So, you know, they said Preem wanted to work. And I'm only omitting the name because I don't know if they want it That's to be fine. Known or whatever. But
Eric Rosenthal.
Yeah. Right, absolutely. Eric and Jeff was like, yo, Preem wants to work with you, my dude. That conversation kind of went for a little minute. And what ended up happening was because Preem is Preem and he's always so busy, it turned into, yo, would you be down to do the record with Sky Zoo? That's somebody else he wants to work with. And we know that you guys know each other and you guys work together. So would it be cool if we did the record, you know, one shot together, both of y'all on it, produced by Preem? And well, you could have put anybody on the record. If Preem is doing the beat, I'm there for it. And, you know, one day I get the email, like, my sidekick, Buzz, I flip it, and it's like, yo, Preem said come to the studio.
Your sidekick.
It was the sidekick era.
Wow.
Flip my shit. It was yeah, wavy. Yeah. Flip my shit up. Read the email. Type back. Sent it. Flip my shit back down. Put it
what
back
color on. Was your sidekick?
It was gray. It's like a basic gray joint.
Did you have a clip or anything? Like,
you know what? I always thought belt clips was stupid, whack.
Crazy whack.
But you had to have one, though, so people saw your shit. You know what I mean? Just like, you stretch a little something. Oh, son got a sidekick. He out here doing it. But yeah, I saw somebody the other day. Yo, this shit was as big as your plaque. He had like the iPhone 6 Plus X.
Oh, yeah.
2000 XL.
Like a Pop-Tart.
Yo, this shit looked like a phone booth. Like, on his, like, I was like, yo, fam, what is that? Like, how do you do anything? Ridiculous. Now,
you did understand. A what are those to?
I was like, what is that?
Did you know SkyZoo at that point?
I knew SkyZoo. Funny how we met. As I digest these beans. Funny how we met. I was at an event in the city. It was the Underground Music Awards. And that's me again, just venturing out, getting out of Brooklyn, getting out of Coney Island, going into the city, seeing what everybody else was doing. Prior to me going out, I was listening to the radio. I didn't know about the independent scene. I didn't know about the underground. I was listening to mainstream radio. I listened to High 97.
Yeah.
I'm like, yo, I could rap better than everybody on the radio. This is all that music has to offer, because at some point...
But could you sing better than Ja Rule?
I definitely could not hold a note like Mr. Jeffrey Atkins. Mm-hmm. But I knew rap-wise, though, mm-hmm. I go for it. I didn't know that it kind of split into like this mainstream and underground scene. And so me just listening to the radio, I'm like, yo, I'm nice. Like, I'm going to get a deal. Like, it's going to happen for me because I can rap. These guys can't even rap. But I started going out. Long story short, I end up at this event, the Underground Music Awards. I'm like, oh, shit, it's a whole other scene. It's a whole other culture. It's like people who can rap and blah, 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 blah. That being said, I still like, I'm nicer than everybody. As I'm leaving, I get in my car. I happen to be parked by where they put the garbage out at. And by my car was this big-ass bag of CDs. And I'm like, oh, shit, I'm going to listen to these. I grabbed the bag, put it in my passenger side. I'm driving back to Coney Island. You know, that take 12 hours. Driving back to CI from Manhattan. I'm driving back to CI. I'm popping in CDs. Oh, you know, this guy raps. Boom, boom, boom. Terrible. Frisbee. Listen to this guy. Terrible. Frisbee. 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 I get to this one CD. SkyZoo. Greatest flow on earth. I'm like, what the fuck is a SkyZoo? Whatever. Pop the CD in. Oh, shit. This is actually all right. Listen to it. First song is good. Second song is good. Third song is good. I'm like, wait a minute. Maybe put all his best shit at the beginning. I know how these guys think. Skip all the way down. Get somewhere later in the project. It was dope. It was dope. It was ill. And I was like, out of all of those CDs that I had, that was the only one that I kept. That was the only one I was like, this guy, I could fuck with him. He's all right. Fast forward, maybe 3 weeks. My man Sean Dawn from the Justice League, you know, little brother and that whole thing. Reaches out to my DJ, Vega Benetton. I was like, yo, I'm working on this project. He was working on a project with Vega. And he was like, yo, I want Torre on it. You know, Vega was in the coalescence with me. He was like, yo, I want Torre on the joint. And he was like, okay, word up. He was like, and I got my man Scott Zoo on the joint. And I was like, yo, I know the Scott Zoo dude. I heard his music. I don't know him personally, but I heard his music. So we all exchange, you know, T-mail information or whatever.
Dope.
And we just chopping it up. On the sidekicks. And you know, SkyZoo had just left North Carolina when I got down there. I probably missed him by a couple days, so we didn't meet. Then I do the record with Sean Dawn. SkyZoo hears the record, like, yo, your man, the Torre kid, he get busy, blah 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 blah. So Sky invites me to the studio out in Huntington, Long Island, where he was recording. Shout out to Nice Tracks. And that was it. That was it. From that day on, we've been power.
Hey guys, we just want to take a second to remind you that this is actually not the first episode that we have ever done. There are actually many more, including this one with Peter Rosenberg of Hot 97, where he tells the story of going to prom.
And Diana came back to town for it.
Wow. She was your prom date?
Yeah. Oh, she was my girlfriend.
No, okay. I didn't know if like she went with someone else.
No, of course not. She was my girlfriend. She came back from Czech Republic just to go to prom. Wow. And graduation.
You had a mail order
prom.
That's
date.
Amazing.
When I started hooking up with Diana, she was dating this guy, Howard. Howard was a bit of a thug. Him and I were cool when he was dating Diana, but like I always liked Diana. So, and we'd been friends before that. So she thought he was a dick, and she started hooking up with me, and I'd been friends with her for a long time. He suspected it, And then she like broke up with him, and then we started dating like right away. It was like one of those situations. And from that point on, it was always like weird between us, and I was always scared of him. Like for sure, like, oh God, Howard. And then he like got kicked out of school. And he'd show up every blue moon, and people would be like, Howard's here. And I'm like, oh my God, right? And the craziest shit, bro. Senior year, now we're years removed. I get to Allison's dad's house for the after party. I'm walking in, blah, blah, blah. Chauncey or someone, one of my good friends, like, yo, Howard just showed up. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me, bro?
Tonight?
Yeah, so all nights.
See, this is the night. No, and it sounds funny. That was really the night. Like, I'd been prom night with my girlfriend of 3 years.
Yeah.
High school sweethearts. Like, this was a big deal. And Howard's there. And and somehow he got word of the party and was just, like, coming over. Even though he didn't go to schools anymore. He didn't go to prom. He didn't graduate. Like, what are you doing here? I think he got handled. I'm pretty sure Allison's older brother, Jeremy, was like, who was 2 years, at this point, is like a junior in college.
Yeah.
And it played on the football team. It was like a pretty, you know.
He was at the prom?
He was home for the summer. So he was kind of like chaperoning the party. And knowing Jeremy in retrospect, probably like trying to hook up high school. I mean, but I really can't be mad at that. He was like 19. I would have been hovering around the after prom party too. Like, what? He was like,
take scraps.
Yeah, like he was still a cool, good looking older guy. He's now in college. Like, what are you doing? Of course. I would recommend to anyone listening, if you are of that age and you have a sibling who might have an after prom, you should go. You're never going to have that opportunity again.
Well, that was weird. Let's get back to this conversation with Teray.
Was there any point, clearly, like listening to mainstream radio and hearing, like, you know, guys on major record labels, was there ever a thought where you're like, you know, you had this point where you're like, oh yeah, there's definitely like this underground scene and I connect with all these people. Was there ever a point where you're just like, if I wanted to, I could get on a bigger label, have that sort of life where it's like, the production is different, the aim of the songs is different, maybe the touring is different.
Mm-hmm. So I grew up loving hip hop, right? And not Mona Scott loving hip hop, but loving
Erica Mena
hip hop. Yeah. Definitely still love that. So for me, it was all I ever wanted to do. And so as I'm listening to the radio and it's changing from, you know, like showbiz and AG to, you know, just hearing like Nelly, you don't know that the shit split. You know what I'm saying? Like you focused on just where you get your content from, the radio, the videos. None of us were like super internet savvy at that point, shit like that. So I was like, well, damn, I have to alter the way I make music now because this is what's on the radio now. And so I started, you know, I was fake Mace. You know, I was wearing leather jerseys and fitted hats to the back. And because that was what, you know, I'm like, well, this is where it's going. So I'm moving with the tide. I'm moving with the flow. So once I discovered the underground, I was like, oh, it was like a big sigh of relief. It was like, yo, I could do the shit that I want to do. Like, I could do the shit that I love and still feel good about it. And so, you know, I instantly just went right back to, you know, my day one of how I wanted to create and make music. But, you know, had I not been exposed to that indie scene, then I definitely would have just pursued it as being like a mainstream rapper. You know, a lot of guys that make it come from the, you know, like a guy like Drake. I think he's a perfect example. He know the shit. He know what it is.
Loves
he was built on it. He was raised on it. You know what I'm saying? I'm sure he took a bunch of cues from Fonte and, you know, loved when he did a record with them in Ninth and just like all that shit, right? But he, you know, you get to that fork in the road or it's time to make a decision. It's like, are you going to stay down here or are you going to take it up? You know, you're going to take the elevator to the top floor. And I don't necessarily knock anybody that does it. You know what I'm saying? Like, do it if it worked for you. God bless you. You know what I'm saying? Like, Peter Rosenberg and I were having a conversation and we were talking about Pitbull. And I was like, yo, Pitbull is like the god of all sellouts. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful manner. I'm talking about I brought in the new year with Pitbull on my TV with a suit on with no side. I was in the living room chilling. He was in Miami, but we was together.
Right. And,
but I'm like, you remember TVT Pitbull?
Yeah, for sure.
He used to rap, like when he was on that shit. So if it works for you, I mean, I can't ever knock that. Like, more power to you. Get every dime you can get. Be as big a star as you can be. If it don't work though, you're gonna look crazy out here. For me, I was just more comfortable in doing the way I do it and feeling like at some point it'll catch on, it'll catch up, it'll get me to where I gotta go. And it's still a process. Like, I'm still getting there, but every year, you know, mad people ask me, so what you looking forward to for 2016? And my mind can't even fathom what, definitely beans, you know what I mean? But I can't even imagine what's next, because from when I came in at 2006, to here 10 years later, I wouldn't have thought half the shit I've been able to accomplish, I would have been able to do. And so, you know.
Can still fit in your leather jerseys.
Because shit was all 6X. So, yo, I got a whole closet full of Mitchell and Ness jerseys that I can't wear. I got a bunch that I can wear that are new that I bought that were right adult size. Mm-hmm. And then I got mad 6Xs. So my man was like, yo, nah, just take them to the cleaners. They could alter them. I'm like, yo, dog, but the number is this big. Like, it was the size of that dude's phone. It's no way they could fix it.
You know how some people, like, let's just say Yankee fans specifically, because their jerseys don't have the names on the back, they just have the number. You know, there are those people who get, like, the custom ones, though, and put their, like, name above it. It's kind of whack, right, to put, like, your name on the back or something like that over that when there's not any name there.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine if there were people who had, like, was it Puff was number one and then Mace was number two? If someone did their own custom jersey where it was just like Eric number three.
Wait, you don't think... Oh, that's super lame. Yeah. I thought you were going to say get the Puff and Mace ones. I would get that.
No, those would be cool.
Once and I get the money to do that.
I'm sure Fabulous is going to do that. Like, one of these days, although he probably got enough shit about like being compared to Mace that he won't get the number two. But he's been on this
street. But like, what else has he gotten?
Oh, he had a Steve Urkel one recently. He had the...
He wore the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air jersey.
Amazing. He had the Ray Finkel one from...
Ace Ventura. Yeah.
He had also the Shootout one from Above the Rim.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... He's on a good streak.
Focused out here.
When do you sign to Duckdown?
2009.
Okay, and how does that relationship build to the point where you're like, let's do business together?
I would say around 2007 is when I started building my relationship with Sean. Sean Price, the greatest. Showed me mad love. You know, we met at the Sky Zoo function, actually. Long story short, he heard me rapping, and he was like, yeah, the bullhead nigga spitting bodies. I fuck with son, or whatever. That's what he called me before he knew my name. Bullhead nigga spitting bodies. He invited me to the studio.
He didn't know you as Caesar.
He did not know me as Caesar. Czar, or Spice, or Paz T. I was the bullhead nigga spitting bodies. But he was super cool, man. I remember, like, again, back to the Sidekick days and such. He was on AIM, Sean God, 7, on AIM.
Wow.
And were there six others?
Nah, it was just him. He started at 7. It was the God of 7. So what was mind-blowing for me was, like, the first time he typed LOL to me. Because it was just like, yo, you mad hardcore. Like, what are you laughing out loud? You said, yeah, whatever, LOL. And I was like, yo, that's crazy. He's a regular human being. Who knew?
You should be like, you're not really laughing out loud. Like,
I'm really laughing. But knowing Sean, he probably was laughing out loud. Yeah. He had this big ass, huge, like, laugh.
Yeah.
But he invited me to a studio session and somewhere in Brooklyn, I probably could have got killed, nor anybody else. We was in the lab, we was chilling. He was working on something for Babu. He was like, yeah, I'm doing this shit for my man Babu or whatever. You got a version one, jump on it. And I was like, hell yeah. And in typical Sean fashion, we do the joint. We in a random studio. The song gets lost. It never comes out. Whatever, whatever. But I was so happy to be on the record with him. Somebody I looked up to who was one of my favorite MCs. It was so dope. So that was my relationship. And then I knew Buckshot from being in my neighborhood since I was a kid. So that was another relationship. And then Marco Polo, the producer, had a working relationship with Drew and Noah because he had produced stuff for the guys. And so when Marco and I got together and started working and putting music out or whatever, it just was like a natural fit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I had never went to Buck and was like, yo, I want a deal. Or never went to Sean, like, yo, help me get on. And, you know, they respected that. You know what I'm saying? It was like, yo, you're going to get it how you get it. And we respect that. You know, when I signed the deal, Buck was like, yo, it's so great to have you here. And I love the way you got here. You know what I'm saying? Like, Buck told me that Drew was like, yo, we thinking about, you know, doing this thing with Torre and Marco Polo and blah, blah, blah. And Buck was like, yo, that's my little man. Like, yes, let's do it for sure. You know what I'm saying? So, like, just having that, you know, having it come through the door the way it did, I think made it more solidified and validated it more because it wasn't just me like, yo, I know you from the neighborhood, put me on. It was like, I got here on my own merit.
I feel like New York now, after years of Atlanta sort of leading what was going on, and Houston and LA, I think now, you know, has a wave. I think New York has like an identity again, where it did not for a long time.
Let me ask you a question. Who do you think is leading the pack in New York right now?
It bums me out. I would have said Chinks Drugs had he been here, but
rest in peace to the homie Chinks for sure.
But I think that, I don't know. I just, I feel like I listened to Rowdy Rebel's mixtape, and I listened to some Dave East stuff, and I listened to ASAP 12e, and it just like got me, like I was walking yesterday.
So you just skip Rocky and Ferg?
Well, no. I do think that those guys, I do think that they are New York artists, yes. I don't think they fit into my argument.
Okay.
And so I'm going to ignore them for now. But I think that they do something that's so much bigger than what feels like New York.
Gotcha.
But I was walking yesterday and it just like I felt like, oh man, like you wanna know what? Like I do have this before I used to be like, you know, New York has like its share of artists, but I didn't feel like that energy was there. You feel differently.
I won't say I feel differently. I like the energy. Anything that's going to bring attention back to the city and the tri-state area, I'm all for it. You know, I'm a New York guy. I'm a New York rapper. And so I love the fact that people care about it again. And I love the fact that people are paying attention again. I think that, and I'm just speaking for myself and my own career, I think that kind of like Big Daddy Kane was a few years too early for everybody to accept some of the shit he did. I feel like when we came in, you know, because now I'm going back 8 years. Like Daily Conversation was January 08. So now we 8 years in. I feel like 8 years ago, people didn't care about New York because of what was happening in the South and other regions. And I'm like, yo, but I've been here all along doing this, waving the flag, making the same music. The shit that you love now from a Dave East or from a Troy or from Action Bronson or Joey or whomever. I'm like, yo, but we've been doing that the whole time.
That's what confuses me about all of this, by the way.
But now I'm the old guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm the, because people like.
But I don't think that you're doing like anything different than like a, not Joey Badass, but like, you know, a Dave East would be, I guess, a better example. And it's like, I don't understand why he's not labeled underground and you are. Can you explain the difference between underground and.
I think it's just a box that people put you in, and it's just like so hard to get out, and that's it. You know what I'm saying? Like, unless you go full, you know, like shiny suits or, you know, whatever the full sellout is at this point, unless you go like full throttle, you always gonna be there. I think that I make music that can have mass appeal and success. Do I make a lot of music that comes from the same authentic aesthetic of a boom bap feel or work with guys like a Pete Rock or a Premier? Absolutely. But Premier worked with Christina Aguilera, you know what I'm saying? Or like Pete Rock was on Watch the Throne, you know what I'm saying? So it's not like these guys don't work with people that are mainstream. I just feel like once people have that mind set up that you are what they say you are and put you in that box, it's almost impossible to escape.
You do have a song on here produced by Jahlil Beats, right?
Yeah, that's like my biggest radio record of my whole career. You know what I'm saying? It's only been out a few weeks. But, you know, shout out to, you know, High 97 and DJ Enough for playing, and shout out to Sus and the guys at Power for playing it. And, you know, it's been added to Hip Hop Nation and all of that on Sirius and such.
How did it get on Hip Hop Nation?
I have no idea. Somebody over there must like me, pay me to be there every day. You know, but it takes a song like that to open up people's ears. And people like, you know, like my core audience is like, yeah, you know, that record is cool or whatever, but it's not, you know. And I'm like, that's the record that's gonna bring everybody else into the album and get everything else that I have on there. You know what I'm saying? Like, you gotta have like that gateway, you know. You gotta put the medicine in the applesauce.
You may be the quote-unquote old guy compared to like, you know, a Dave East or an Action Bronson or a Rocky, but my favorite story in rap for years now has been 2 Chainz.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who was around for ages, right? And he just
reinvented himself, yeah.
And he kept putting product out there, and he put product out that people eventually liked. Mm-hmm. And then it got hot and it just snowballed. I don't think that like age is really a thing anymore, per se.
I think that some of the like the dopest artists and people that, you know, I mean, I exclude Nas, exclude Jay-Z. These guys are, you know what I'm saying, like iconic. But, you know, even like a guy like Ross, who's relatively successful, you know what I'm saying, like puts records out. He's of a certain age.
Totally.
You know what I'm saying? And I also think that he makes, or he has a certain feel in his music that's very authentic to the sound that people who are in my fan base appreciate. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of soulful shit. You know, what he get with the Justice League, that's just magic. You know what I'm saying? Now, whether you love all the content or not, that's one thing. But I feel like the actual feel of the music and the sound of the music is not so much different from what I do.
Do you feel like the underground and your fans specifically would have a problem if you did a full project with Jahlil Beats?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's
unfortunate.
Absolutely.
I don't get that.
I had people, when the track listing went out, I had people debating and mad because Jahlil Beats' name was on the track. I'm like, yo, you didn't even hear the song, dog.
That's crazy.
Like, it could be the hardest, dopest. Like, you didn't. You just basically went right off of, yeah, I don't like the fact. I wish it's, it, one of the guys like, man, I wish that said Ninth Wonder instead. And I'm like, yo, like, and there's no shot. I'm just saying, like, Ninth could have sent a terrible beat. Jahlil could have sent a great beat. You more so caught up in the names of it all than the music. And this is what it's supposed to be about. It's the music.
Wasn't that the same thing with, like, Ben Affleck playing Batman? And people were like, oh, well, Ben Affleck could never play Batman. It's like, well, anybody can play anybody. Right. Same thing with Donald Glover playing Spider-Man. Like, nobody could believe that that would happen. And it's just like, people need to just, like, chill and actually wait for products to come out instead of...
I do think that a lot of the purists in hip-hop are very close-minded. And that's probably the only thing I don't like about... outside the fact that they don't fucking buy records. But they're also very, very close-minded. And it's like, yo, open your mind, dog. Like, have a conversation. Give it a listen. Give it a shot before you already decide that you don't like it. Now, if you listen to the Jahlil Beats record and you don't like it, and I get that some people won't like it, but I think in the grand scheme of where it fits in the album and the story that it tells, it works. And I feel like if I had to pluck a song out to bring everybody else into the other 13 tracks, and that's the one that did it, then it serves its purpose.
Is it possible that you may do a project that is like beyond the scope of what your core fans may appreciate or understand or want you to do?
Yeah, I think anything is possible just because I'm an artist and I like to create. You know, even when you look at my what was the name of that shit? Heart Failure. The Heart Failure mixtape. My least liked project from a lot of my core audience. A lot of people just didn't like it. But it was for a few different reasons I made the record. I definitely wanted to tap into the female fan base in that audience. I also wanted to get away from what had just come out, which was Double Barrel, which was very hard, very street. It was on Duck Down. It was very New York and gritty and Tim's and hoodies and guns. And I was like, and I'll be stuck right there for my whole career if I don't do something that's the polar opposite opposite of this immediately. And that's why I did that. And those records are still all over MTV, still get licensed, still enable me to go to the studio and pay Pete Rock or Premier to do the shit that you love.
So how could people be mad at that?
Because people are fucking idiots. I love y'all though. Thank you for the support.
Yeah.
No, but you know, it's like I wish I could come to everybody's house and have this conversation, because a lot of people just don't get it. They don't get the way things work, and they want to believe that everything is one way when it's not the case. It's like, this is still a music business. This is still what I do. So I still got to pay my rent. So when you turn on Viacom and you see Follow the Rules, and the first thing you hear after Ja Rule talks his shit is a Torre song, that generates money. That's the money that I use to make this album. Like, this album was not funded by Kickstarter. Let's just go there. Mad people like, yo, you did the album of Kickstarter? I'm like, dog, Kickstarter was $10,000. That paid for two beats. No exaggeration. It literally paid for two beats, and that was it. And
as long as those beats are not by Jahlil Beats.
Exactly. But, you know, and for me, it wasn't about, you know, getting money for the project. It was about figuring out how to connect with the audience on a deeper level past just music. But, you know, to go back to my points, like, people just don't understand how a lot of this shit works. You know, they look in on the surface. And I don't expect everybody to understand the inner workings, but I do wish I could explain it to them so they could have a better grasp of why things happen the way they do.
First of all, you should get this album just because of Teray, but if you want to hear features on there as well, Mac Wilds is
sure
on here.
Sure, you like Mac Wilds more than me.
He's also in The Breaks.
Fonte is on here.
Sure, you like Fonte more than me.
He's also on The Breaks.
Facts.
Pharoah Monch.
Not on The Breaks.
Not on The Breaks. Breaks.
Them's The Breaks.
He break down them bars, though.
Teedra Moses.
She's beautiful.
You remember her from MMG. Saul Williams. I mean, there's a bunch of features on here. You were saying at your listening session, by the way, that the original idea for a Mac Wilds song was like...
totally different.
More like sort of up-tempo.
Something sexy for the ladies.
This was something more...
This just came out about organically. But like I said, then it's one of my favorite songs. I love it. Everybody was relatively... Like, my thing was not to run around, chase people, reach, try to get a name. Yo, I'm on SiriusXM, do this for me. Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was none of that. It was like, I want to work with people who want to work with me, people who get it, people who are fans, or people who have that mutual respect. And that's everybody on the project. So nothing was a problem.
But I feel like that also speaks to, like, who you are as a person, right? That facts. They, that they, like, deliver that quickly. That's a sign of respect.
I want to run into him at a party. Waiting on that verse.
Entitled, out in stores right now. They can find you also on SiriusXM.
Absolutely. Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern on Hip Hop Nation, SiriusXM Channel 44, bringing you straight hip hop hits, period.
I have old OJ the Juice Man drops for Sirius Hip Hop Nation. So here's a bunch of OJ the Juice Man drops that I was sent years ago.
Hey, what it do? Oh, man, this your boy OJ the Jew Man. And right now, we on Hip Hop Nation, cuz. This the hood tour, you know what I'm talking about? We on this big bus. They got like 12 beds, oh, man, 13 beds. Forget the bed in the back, you know what I'm talking about? The big bed, oh, man, we on the bus having a good time on this hood tour right now on Hip Hop Nation, man. This your boy OJ the Jew Man. I'm gonna tell y'all the concept behind Make the Trap Say, hey, let me think back. All right, me and Gucci, that is. You know, that's my big dog. We was at Zaytoven House. Zaytoven's the producer. Zaytoven made the beat. We at Zaytoven House working on a couple of records. And I stumbled across the Make the Trap Say A track. Aw, man, Juice Man, what you do when you stumble across that track? I went all the way in, cuz. I'm talking about I went in. I wrote the hook. I wrote two verses. Put it and presented it to Gucci. Gucci, that is. You know what I'm talking about? Aw, man, and he did his part. And after that, it was a classic. Now that we talking about Make the Trap Say A, we gonna hit y'all across the head with Make the Trap Say A. Here it is right here. Finna bring it to you live on Hip Hop Nation. Make the Trap Say A. Hey! Hey, welcome back to this hood tour. We still on the bus right now, Hip Hop Nation. You know, Juice Man still in the bid. I just want to let everybody know my big inspirations in the rap game. Oh, man, I'm gonna take it back to when we was listening to cassettes. You know, it was people like Doghouse Posse, Ruthless Juvenile, Tupac, Biggie. Then when the No Limit days and Cash Money days came, we was on that venture right there. Doing like big inspirational and keep people to my rap career. Like when I was growing up, like looking for it and not even knowing what the rap business was about, but me going to buy their music, and then we just sitting in the hood listening to their music, and now that I'm in the music industry, I'm making music. So it was all a beautiful thing by me coming up in that culture that them guys that I mentioned was putting out good music, and I'm glad that they was there for them to put out good music for me to hear. And since we was into them throwbacks right now, we're going to go back into Make Them Say by Master P, one of them real, real, real platinum records, you know what I'm talking about, that went out of here and got that boy some light. Hey, this your boy OJ the Juice Man. I'm still on the hood tour, cuz. Still on the bus, about to wrap it up. And I'm finna talk to y'all about my jewelry and my car game. Oh, man, Juice Man got like sound car, cuz. How I keep up with the car note? How I keep up with the car insurance with sound car? Juice Man in the building. We still on this hood tour on Hill Hot Nation. Jewelry game insane. Oh, man, he need a doctor. He's sick. And right here is the Good Night record. Me and Gucci, produced by Speedy. Hey,
how do you fill up 5 hours?
That's so much shit going on that it's relatively easy.
You don't just like repeat bits throughout the day.
So if you guys were listening to 3 o'clock hour, this is brand new.
Do you have Do you have any like regular callers who were just like, there's something about them that's just like
crazy,
not all there? Yeah.
I definitely had one crazy guy who was called every Sunday. So much so that I think he scared off my assistant from the weekend. Like, he was just a really, really weird dude. He kept talking about wanting to come up to the show, but he wasn't an artist. That's not weird. Artists always say that. He would call in, and he always was very opinionated, depending on what the topic was.
Sure.
He was like, yeah, man, so when I make my way to New York, you know, you got to have me up there in the studio. And it was really, really weird, man. It was really weird. For the most part, I just get, like, drunk people or people who like that. You know what I realized is that these kids are fucking crazy, man. They like to have fun. They like to have a lot of unprotected sex. They like to do drugs. Like,
who are you talking about?
The kids that listen to the show that call up. And you guys. No.
These are the type of people that you attract on your show.
These are the type of people that listen to what the program director programs on Hip Hop Nation. Not going to put that shit on me. Yo, I talk about like shit like, I think I was talking about when I got on Snapchat. You know, I was talking about my Snapchat, and I was talking about how I was so late to Snapchat because I couldn't get my name. And, you know, people started talking, calling up, and we were talking about social media and hooking up on social media. And it was so many girls, like girl after girl, talking about hooking up with dudes and fucking at the first time. And I was just like, yo, this is nuts. One girl was so bad that like the next three callers.
How bad was she?
So bad. Yo, the next three callers called in and they didn't even want to talk to me. They were doing like an on-air intervention. They was like, yo, Shelly, listen to me, man. This is Kevin from Massachusetts. You got to get your life together. Like, yo, she was talking about she was messing with this one dude and they got high and drunk and she woke up and his friend was smashing and there was no condom and she blacked out. But she didn't take any issue with any of it. Like, it was just like a regular ass weekend.
No, she sounds great.
I was like, dog, yo, get your life.
Your radio show is like Loveline all of a sudden.
Like. Yo, for real. Being like, hey, call me up. Let me know how I can help you. Your life.
Wait, can you do one of the throws that you do for the radio right now? Where it's like you being like, you know, like, yo, like call in. Let me know like what your thoughts are on this.
All right. So I'll be like, listen, man, it's your tour guy, Torre, right here on Sirius XM Hip Hop Nation. I got my guys, the Rosenthals, here, and we talking about so many different things. Now, you know these guys from their sketch comedy. It's the real. You see them poke fun at a bunch of rappers. My question to you all is, do Jews belong in hip hop? Hit me right now, 877-60-HIP-HOP. We going to talk about it, baby.
That was great. Yeah. I'm going to use that as a drop. That's
right. Yeah. Yo, Tor, thanks for coming up to the Upper West Side.
Thank you guys for having me. Thank you for the salmon. It smelled delicious. It looked great.
Yo, good luck with the beans.
Beans no, you guys need luck with the beans. Because once they go in, they got to come out.
Thanks, Tor.
Peace.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to A Waste of Time with It's the Real Jeff. Would you like to do it again next week?
Yeah. Let's do it again then.
All right, it's a deal. We'll see you next week, next Tuesday. Until then, A Waste of Time is on SoundCloud, iTunes. Go tell a friend. Go rate, review. You know, spread the word.
Talk about it on Twitter.
Just put a big banner on the back of a plane and fly it around New York. Let people know.
It seems like a...
It's viral marketing. Go do it.
I'm just saying it's bad for the environment.
Go do it.
Not only are you spending money on gas, but you're also spending money on paper.
That's love, though.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.